Live from the historic parsonage of the 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania, it's Iron Sharpens Iron. This is a radio platform in which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17 tells us iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Matthew Henry said that in this passage, we are cautioned to take heed with whom we converse and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better. It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next 2 hours, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. And now, here's your host, Chris Arnzen.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, Lake City, Florida, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming at ironsharpensironradio.com. This is Chris Arnzen, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, wishing you all a happy Friday on this 8th day of March 2019. And you know, many of you may remember that every time there's been a special landmark in the history of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, my guest, Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries, has been involved in it, beginning with our debut broadcast in 2005, our relaunching debut in 2015, and today he's our guest when we have our brand new opening for Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, which you just heard, thanks to some fine Christian folks who voluntarily did this just because of their love for Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I want to thank Will C., the new announcer for the Iron Sharpens Iron Radio intro. Jason Martin, who produced this creation that we had in the beginning. He's a producer and sound engineer. Richard Shukin was on lead guitar. Tyler Friesen on drums. And Davis Friesen on bass. And Jason Martin contacted me about a year ago, and he said, you know, we did the opening for Dividing Line that James White hosts, and we would love to do your opening, and then, God willing, we will have that done for you. And about a year later, we got that opening, and I'm very grateful because I really love that opening. And by the way, I want to also thank the lead guitarist for Skinny Molly, which is a group that is a collaboration between members of Lynyrd Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet. Jay Johnson, whose father is actually legendary blues guitarist Jimmy Johnson. Jay and his wife, Sandy, I met them providentially in Birmingham, Alabama, at Chez Fon Fon Restaurant when I was there for one night while returning home from Laurel, Mississippi. And Jay is a phenomenal guitarist. I shared the opening that Jason Martin and his friends created for Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, and he loves it. And he actually gave some suggestions as to the timing of when the announcer came in and the music, which has been utilized for this final product. And also, Pete Orta, lead guitarist of Petra, former lead guitarist of Petra, said he absolutely loves the opening too. So thanks, guys. But now it's my honor and privilege to welcome back to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries.
Good to be with you, Chris.
And I am excited that we have a very controversial issue that we are going to be addressing today, the Pope, the Grand Imam, and the Joint Declaration on Human Fraternity. And Dr. James R. White, before we even go into that, I mean, there's probably maybe only about one or two people on the planet Earth who listen to this show who might not be very familiar with Alpha and Omega Ministries. Why don't you just share a summary of what Alpha and Omega Ministries is?
Wow. Well, we're the other people that have an opening from the members of Grey Level, the Canadian progressive rock band. Obviously, Alpha and Omega has been around, good grief, 30, coming up on 36 years now. Hard to believe, and knowing Rich and I, we come up on the 40 and we'll forget all about it and probably won't even say anything about it, but we've been at it for a little while, not as long as John MacArthur has been at it for 50 years, but We're getting there, and we're a Christian apologetics organization. We're not a large organization. Rich and I aren't smart enough to hire other people, so we just do it all ourselves. And you know, we've had different seasons of focus. I've noticed that's sort of how things have gone. We started off primarily dealing with Mormonism, and then expand out into Jehovah's Witnesses, and then started dealing with the subject of Roman Catholicism, which is sort of where you became involved with things there on Long Island for a number of years. And then in around 2005, 2006, began dealing with the subject of Islam. And all through that, there has been an emphasis on issues relating to Bible translation, textual criticism, textual critical issues, King James only movement, and things along those lines as well. And not certainly by any choice of mine, over the past couple of years, the past year, the issue of the social justice movement and issues along those lines has unfortunately intruded itself into our work as well. That's not an area I enjoy dealing with at all. It's always a not just a challenge, but in almost all the other areas, you get done dealing with something, and there's something positive you can sort of take out of it. This is the one area that I hardly ever feel like there's something positive that you can take away from it at the end. So it's a bit draining to deal with it. It doesn't seem to want to go away either. But anyway, so we deal with Christian apologetics, and we'll just keep doing that. Obviously, starting 2005, I started traveling overseas to do things, and now most of what I'm doing, honestly, as far as teaching and stuff, is overseas. I was just teaching in Samara, Russia, back in January, and had never experienced 28 degrees below zero, but I got to do that. And of course, driving through tunnels of snow in Russia in a taxi cab is quite the interesting experience, especially when your cabbie is chatting away with your translator up front, and they're discussing Islam, and so it's this sort of makes things really 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 interesting.
Yes, I remember I had a fascinating discussion on Islam with our mutual friend Eddie Delcour one day. And I was on the phone having this discussion, and it just dawned on me in the middle of the conversation that I was having a straight razor shave by a Turkish barber while I was doing this. That is not a joke. But he was a very nice and very talented barber. thank God. But I just thank God that I have been blessed by your friendship and collaborating with you in Christ's Vineyard since 1995, and I busted a gut that I think most of my neighbors must have heard me laughing today when I sent a private message on the Facebook to James White to remind him to call into the studio 5 minutes before the show started, and he said, "Who are you and how did you get this number?" And of course, that goes back to our first phone conversation,
which would have been what, about
95?
Okay,
yeah, right. It might have been a little bit early. It might have been 94, but we had the debate in 96, did we not? The first debate with Jerry Mattis.
I think so. Yeah.
But I had called James to invite him to debate Jerry Mattis on the Marian dogmas on Long Island, New York, in 95, and after a pause of silence on the phone, he said, how did you get this number? Which totally put me at ease that this was going to be a wonderful conversation.
you weren't at ease until about 10 minutes into my opening statement. You were under great stress up until that point, but about the third time that Jerry Mattis said exactly what I said he was going to say, was finally, I think, when you started to relax.
Which was, "I'm sorry I'm late. I didn't have time to prepare for today's debate. I have my entire library in storage."
Yep. All I've had to eat is a Diet Coke, and
I feel like David fighting Goliath today.
Yep. Yep. I could have written his opening statement. I really could have.
And then years later, I'm sitting in my office listening to a tape of a debate that Eric Svensson had with Jerry Matatex years after the debate that you had on Long Island. And I'm listening, and all of a sudden I hear Jerry say, you know, I want to apologize, folks, for being late today. I had so many things that I had to do. My library's in storage, and I feel like David fighting Goliath. I was like, what? I said, doesn't he realize these are recorded?
Well, I think the exact same thing about Bart Ehrman. I mean, if you listen to Bart Ehrman's debates, you know, he'll say, how many of you here are evangelical Christians? Okay. And how many of you here would like to see me get creamed in this debate? And then he starts laughing. It doesn't matter if anybody puts their hands up. He just starts laughing. And it's like, okay, all right, man, that's stale, dude, but whatever you say. So, yeah, there are people that do that. I mean, all of us have stories we use if we're public speakers, but it's like, come on, Ehrman was so bad that when he and I did our debate in 2009, his PowerPoint presentation contained the same typos that it contained 2 months earlier when he debated Dan Wallace. He hadn't even bothered to fix them. So it's just sort of like, I knew where he was going, you know, all I had to do was listen carefully, and, you know, but he hadn't, you know, he doesn't think that we have anything meaningful to say anyways, so that's another subject for another time.
Yeah, and of course, there's a difference between a standard joke that you might use and something that you are telling as factual reasons why you might not be as prepared as you should be. Totally different issue there.
Yeah, you know, I have not heard Jerry do a debate in literally decades. I don't know if he does them anymore. I don't know what he's doing. Honestly, you know the last time I saw Jerry Matatex?
When was that?
On Jeopardy.
Wow, when was that?
Oh, I'd say about 4 or 5 years ago. He was in Jeopardy, and he lost on his first appearance. So he didn't win or anything. But I mean, he didn't. I guess he ended up with zero. But that's because he bet it all at the end. But yeah, he was actually on Jeopardy, and that was the last time I heard anything about him. So I'm not sure if there's a morality tale to be discovered from that, given how Catholic Answers was promoting him as the be-all and end-all of all things for quite some time in the early 1990s. But, you know, things change, and so do people, I guess. So I'm sure he's still running around out there. I just don't know what in the world he believes anymore or anything else. So who knows?
Yes, and the last I heard about his activities, he had debated a state of vacantist before he was one, and that's the first time that I heard of a debate where one of the participants actually converted over to his opponent's ideology or theology.
Okay, yeah.
That was a while ago. That was.
Oh, yeah, because he's been some weird variant of state of vacantist for a long, long time. But, you know, we're talking about stuff that has nothing to do with our topic, and most of the people in the audience have no idea what we're talking about either. So,
well... Well, I speak to you so rarely these days that I like to catch up with you.
But, there you go.
But
so, as you know, I'm a grandfather, got 4 grandkids. Summer's 30 years old now. How's that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, tell her I said hello, and looking forward to the next opportunity I have to see her again, and also to see Kelly again. So.
Well, and you've had Summer on, right?
Yes, just once, and I'd like to have her back. She was almost near her. It wasn't that long after her debut of Sheologians, I don't think.
They're in their, you know, 2.5 years in now. So
right.
Yeah, you'll have to have her back on. She's a sharp cookie.
I definitely will, and it's interesting how many people I have met at the G3 conference and other big events when I'm manning an exhibitor's booth, and they'll say to me, "Hey, you're the guy that does the debates with James White. You MC those debates and stuff." Yeah, I am. Yeah, I heard about James White through Summer White.
Oh, yeah. I had someone asked a question at the last conference I was at, which Eddie Dalcour was at as well, and said addressed it to Summer's dad. So I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's fine. In fact, I was speaking at a GAFCON Anglican church in Belfast, Northern Ireland, just last year, and I just happened to ask on a Saturday morning how many people in the audience that had gathered knew of Sheologians. And I'd say about a third of the audience put their hands up.
Wow. So
that's pretty amazing in that short period of time. So they definitely got a niche audience. I mean, there aren't too many women out there doing webcasts where they're actually arguing against feminism and intersectionality and all the rest of that stuff, and arguing for complementarianism and stuff like that.
Well, we are talking, as I announced at the beginning of the program today, about an issue that I wanted to address because I had a number of my listeners contact me and say, when are you going to talk about this joint declaration that Pope Francis signed with a grand imam? And I know that you had covered it to a more shorter version of it, of a presentation on this on February 5th in the Dividing Line. It was an ultra mega Dividing Line, almost 3 hours long. And, but you had a lot of topics. This was only a small portion of that show. So I figured, well, let me have James back on the show to discuss this at a greater length, and we'll have audience questions as well. And by the way, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. If you have a question for James, please give us your first name, at least your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And please only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. So this document that I have seen described on a prominent Catholic website was, and I think I've heard it or read it under different specific titles, but this was called on this particular website, the Joint Declaration on Human Fraternity. And obviously Pope Francis was involved. Tell us about this grand imam who was involved, and tell us, you know, exactly what that even means, grand imam. There are a lot of people that, for some reason, because they know the Roman Catholic Church has a pope, they think every other religion has some kind of a pope, you know, some one main figure that is their go-to guy for the ultimate answer and final decision on things. I can remember Bob Posch, my friend who now lives in Colorado, but you remember Bob Posch, Roman Catholic friend of mine who's still a dear friend, who actually indirectly helped me launch the decade-long series of the great debates that you had with Roman Catholics on Long Island. And my Catholic friend Bob Posch used to say to me, you just go by everything that your Pope Billy Graham says. and I would respond, Bob, I'm a Reformed Baptist, and I'm sure there were far more priests, bishops, and cardinals involved in the Billy Graham Crusades than there are Reformed Baptists.
That's true.
But tell us about that. This grand imam, what is that even to start with, a grand imam?
Well, yeah, that's just it. I've asked a number of my Muslim friends over the past month or so. I had not heard of Ahmed Al-Tayeb prior to this. And right now, there's a lot of divisions. There's something political / religious going on in regards to Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, a lot of money, and some major changes in what would be identified as anything relevant to conservative Sunni Islam / Wahhabism, Salafism. I mean, we identify the Wahhabis and the Salafis sort of as Islamic fundamentalists, and that is the primary ground out of which extremism comes, and you get your terrorists and things like that out of, they're very normally recruited out of those particular individuals, but those don't really represent what you have in authority in Saudi Arabia or the UAE. They want stability because, well, they're making a lot of money, and so they don't want terrorism and things like that, and so the Saudis are always looking for some mechanism of stability and keeping things going. And then, of course, they're having to balance all sorts of different pressures and stuff. And so Al-Azhar, the universities, you know, these are places where terrorism can, you know, goes to look to find people, but the leadership generally is not seeking to inculcate that kind of thing. And so I was asking my friends, I said, so how is Al-Tayyib viewed within Islam? And I don't get a lot. I didn't get much in the way of response. Just sort of like, well, you know, the document raises some eyebrows when it says this or says that. But, you know, there really hasn't been much of a pushback from Islamic sources. Certainly not on the same level as even within Roman Catholicism. I mean, there's a couple statements within that we'll get to that make most conservative Roman Catholics shake their heads or just go, well, there goes Francis again. You know, you have imams who have positions of great authority, whether it be within scholarship or whether it be within the production of fiqh, the judicial decisions, fatwas, things like that. But there's a lot of divisions. And so just as we have to explain to folks that the Pope doesn't represent us or that Billy Graham doesn't speak for all Protestants, or, you know, pick a name today of John Piper or something like that, you know, they too have their divisions. And so there would be some within his group that obviously would attach a fair amount of authority to his statements. But then there would be others that would go, well, you know, I'm not really concerned about what he has to say. There just isn't the same kind of, I don't even know how to describe it. I was speaking with an imam about his work as an imam, and it struck me how many differences there are. For example, he was saying there is no membership at a mosque, and so you can just go to any mosque you want as long as you do the prayers. It doesn't matter where you're doing them, and so you can have a completely different group showing up every week. There's no development of any what we would call a pastoral relationship or knowledge of who's who. And hence, you can't really do anything like what we would call discipline, and that's why they really sort of wonder why we ask questions about some of these individuals, because we would want to say, well, that guy over there, I mean, there's a guy who's becoming imbalanced, or there's a guy that there's a complete heretic. They don't really. The more well-read Muslim realizes that there is actually a real hesitance of proclaiming someone a kafir, an unbeliever. If you proclaim a fellow Muslim as a kafir, and on the judgment day it's discovered that he was not, you're the one that will be punished with what he would have been punished with if you had been right. And so there's a hesitancy in light of that type of a concept. To pronounce on somebody else's spiritual standing or even their teaching. You'll argue. You know, they have plenty of arguments, and they argue about eschatology just as much as we do, if not more. But they you know, will listen to what Al-Tayyib has to say, but, you know, unless you're within his particular group of a sphere of influence, it's like, well, he's a well-known cleric. He should be respected as a well-known cleric, but it's not like he's the Pope of all Muslims or anything like that, because there really isn't anything like that. And that's what made ISIS weird, is that ISIS was basically saying they were reestablishing the caliphate, and hence you would have a caliph who could speak for all Muslims. And he's not pretending to be a caliph. This is a theological document, and as such is very interesting, but even from the Roman Catholic side, it's not binding. This isn't some kind of dogmatic statement from the Pope.
What was the intention, that you can understand anyway, in getting together with Pope Francis, getting together with the Grand Imam for this joint declaration on human fraternity? It's funny because I know folks, friends of mine, and acquaintances who responded to this with, you know, I got bombarded with emails and texts and private messages about this monumental thing, in their minds that has occurred, monumental in a horrible way. And I basically responded, well, have you read the Modern Roman Catholic Catechism?
Right.
I mean, this is not really something new in regard to some kind of appearance of unity that that Muslims have with the Catholic Church. And in fact, if you go to the Modern Catholic Catechism, many people are unfamiliar with this, even some Catholics. But in Article 841, the plan of salvation also includes those who acknowledge the Creator in the first place, amongst whom are the Muslims. These profess to hold to the faith of Abraham, and together with us, they adore the one merciful God, mankind's judge, on the last day. And I brought that up years ago in the old Iron Sharpens Iron radio broadcasting out of Long Island when I had David Wood debating Bassam Zawadi, and I asked Bassam Zawadi, do you adore the same one merciful God with the Roman Catholics? Absolutely not.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, and I, the first person that I asked his thoughts on this was Bassam Zawadi. Bassam's a very nice young man. He's you know, a deep thinker, and I'm looking forward to engaging with him in the future again. We did one debate together at Trinity Chapel in Wandsworth a number of years ago, but we really haven't had the opportunity of doing anything since then. But I do want to do that again with him. But yeah, that's just it. Is at least from a conservative perspective, I would just have to say that a thoughtful Muslim is not going to say that we adore the same God. And that's what made some of the statements in this document, I think, questionable and caused at least some people to raise their eyebrows at it on both sides, because it does seem to follow that same perspective that's found in Section 841. And, of course, we did an entire debate on that very issue on Long Island many moons ago. I've forgotten the name of the fellow that we did the debate with. I can see him.
Oh, you mean will non-Christians enter heaven?
Well, yeah. I mean, we got into that particular aspect of it. Bill something?
Rutland.
Bill Rutland. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, and you didn't really get clear, concise answers really from anybody. Even back then, on exactly what was going on there. But Francis obviously goes, as a pope, far beyond where any of those folks ever went, and any of the people that were involved in writing the catechism. He's way, way, way out there. I don't know how anybody can listen to what the man says and look at his record and look at his words and his actions and not see just a continental size difference between himself and his predecessor on fundamental articles of faith. It just, if you can sit there and say, oh yeah, all these guys, all these popes, they all together are protecting the one deposit of faith. Well, that deposit of faith has no definition to it. It has no meaning to it. It's very, very obvious. And that is reflected in this document, in its language, and all sorts of stuff like that. It just reeks of it. There's things in here that you can tell come from the other side. But a lot of the ishy-squishy language, I think, goes not to Ahmed al-Tayyib, but to Pope Francis. It just reflects his worldview.
Now, what was, going back to my original question about the purpose of it, why did did Pope Francis or the Vatican say, we've got to sit down with a grand imam and have this joint declaration? What was the real purpose of it?
I have no idea. I would assume that there had probably been contacts and discussions about this for quite some time that would not have had much opportunity of fruition under Ratzinger, Benedict, because I just cannot imagine Cardinal Ratzinger writing something like this or agreeing to something like this. But obviously, Francis has been Pope for a while, so why exactly now? I do not know. But there may have been some doors open in the past, and then did Ahmed Al-Tayyib, through his people, contact the Curia? I've not seen anything that discusses that at all. Francis has been criticized for not speaking out loudly enough or often enough in regards to the persecution of Christians in Muslim lands. So maybe this is a way of dealing with that. I do not know.
I could just picture in my mind, before the document was signed, a room filled with the cardinals and bishops and Muslims and imams, and having Pope Francis stand up in the midst of them and say, "This is supposed to be a happy occasion. Let's not bicker and argue about who said what and who killed who," from the old Monty Python show. But
yeah. He does seem to have that sort of we're talking about a wild-eyed liberal. We're talking about I'm trying to get people not to use that term anymore. I was raised using it, but a wild-eyed leftist.
Yes.
In his theology and his politics. And so I have no earthly idea, and I don't know if we will in this lifetime, know, A, what caused Ratzinger to resign. There's lots of theories. I mean, there's all sorts of theories. And there's supposed to be quite a good book. I've already pre-ordered it, but I haven't seen it yet. Some people have already read it. I'm not sure how that works out. But I have pre-ordered this, Inside the Vatican Closet or something like that. I'll get to it once it comes out. But
and who wrote that?
A Roman Catholic priest. It's primarily about the gay mafia and homosexuality and
wow.
so on and so forth in Rome. But I guess he was, right in the middle of it. And I would not be surprised for a second if Ratzinger's just got out of there because he got so sick and tired of trying to deal with that. I don't know. How then do you go from Ratzinger to Francis? Still don't know. That is a mystery that, like I said, I'll bet you there is a specific reason for it, but whether we'll ever know it in this life, I don't know. But it does result in the simple reality that to any thinking person, you just have to stand on your head and spin in circles to avoid the reality that you're talking about two men with very, very different perspectives on what the faith is and how it's defined, no one can tell me that Francis isn't minimally an inclusivist and probably a universalist. And who knows? Maybe that's what opens some of the opportunity for this document is statements that he has made that does seem to point toward a universalistic concept. So maybe folks on the other side figured this was a good time. I don't know, but I do know that it's tough days for Roman Catholic apologists. When I see some Protestant converting right now to Roman Catholicism, I just roll my eyes. There's something else going on here because I just can't imagine a time that would be more difficult,
right,
for the Roman Catholic side to substantiate any kind of ultimate claims of authority when you've got Francis going around, "Oh, homosexuality? Who am I to say?" And I listened to a former Catholic Answers staffer, on-air personality, did a video with some other people, about 6 months or so ago, called Taking the Red Pill on Pope Francis. And it was just like, we got to wake up and realize this is what's going on, and this is the nature of this papacy, and, what do you do about it? And we're all sitting there, I'm listening to this going, how about considering that the whole thing's a mess in the first place? How about realizing that what we've been saying all along is true? But no, it's, this isn't going to last forever, and there have been anti-popes in the past, and blah, blah, blah. It's pretty hard to be making the types of arguments that Carl Keating and Jerry Matatics and Patrick Madrid and Scott Hahn and all these guys were making back in the 90s when you've got Pope Francis running around giving you headaches every single day.
That's why Jerry Medics doesn't make those arguments anymore and says the chair of Peter is vacant.
Yeah, well, he obviously did that long before Francis came along, and
right.
I'm sure he's going, see,
yeah,
I told you.
Right.
But he was saying that when Benedict was Pope too. So
right, and well, we're going to go to our first break right now. By the way, did that Catholic Answers staff member who made that comment about the red pill, is that why he's a former staff member?
Well, I you know. They don't want to say, but I can't imagine that it was not at least part of the process. Yeah, yeah. Patrick Coffin's in it.
Okay, because my friend Robert Sengenis, who you know very well since you've debated him a number of times,
five times.
Bob shared with me that he was fired from EWTN for publicly being critical of Pope John Paul II, especially in regard to ecumenism with pagan priests and, you know, Wiccans and kissing the Quran and all that kind of thing. And he got the door for that. But as much as I disagree with Bob, I do appreciate his willingness to try to be as honest as he can with the information that he has, no matter where the chips fall. But we're going to our first break right now. If you have a question, you'll have to get in line because we do have a number of people already waiting now to have their questions asked and answered by Dr. James R. White. But if you have a question, please send it as soon as you can to chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us at least your first name, your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. Only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, announcing a new website with an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World Now at no charge for 90 days by going to getworldnow.com. That's getworldnow.com. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis, and World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes bi-weekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. There's no obligation and no credit card required. Visit GetWorldNow.com today. Also check out World News Group's podcast, The World and Everything in It, at WNG.org/podcast. That's W for World, N for News, G for Group, .org/podcast.
Hello, my name is James Renahan, and I'm the president of IRBS Theological Seminary in Mansfield, Texas. The Word of God says, if a man desires the office of an overseer, he desires a good thing. Do you have the desire to serve Jesus Christ in pastoral ministry? 20 years ago, the Institute of Reformed Baptist Studies at Westminster Seminary, California was born. For those two decades, these institutions worked together to train men for ministry in Reformed Baptist churches. It has been a wonderful partnership. Now we have advanced our school into an independent seminary offering a full program of courses leading to the Master of Divinity degree. This is IRBS Theological Seminary. We believe that the scriptures of the Old and New Testaments are the inspired and inerrant Word of God, that Jesus Christ is God in the flesh who came to save sinners by his life, death, and resurrection, and that the task of the church is to honor and serve the triune God in all things. IRBS Theological Seminary is dedicated by God's grace to preparing godly ministers who will be committed to these doctrines. Do you sense a call to serve Jesus Christ and his church as a pastor? Why not consider IRBS Theological Seminary? You'll find more information at irbsseminary.org. That's irbsseminary.org, two S's in the middle. I hope to hear from you soon. God bless you.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
give yourself unto reading.
The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read.
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries here. If you've watched my Dividing Line webcast often enough, you know I have a great love for getting Bibles and other documents vital to my ministry rebound to preserve and ensure their longevity. And besides that, they feel so good. I'm so delighted I discovered Post Tenebris Lux Bible Rebinding. No radio ad will be long enough to sing their praises sufficiently, but I'll give it a shot. Jeffrey Rice of Post Tenebris Lux is a remarkably gifted craftsman and artisan. All his work is done by hand, from the cutting to the pleating of corners to the perimeter stitching. Jeffrey uses the finest and buttery soft imported leathers in a wide variety of gorgeous colors, like the turquoise goat skin tanned in Italy used for my Nestle Allen 28th edition, with a navy blue goat skin inside liner, and the electric blue goat skin from a French tannery used to rebind a Reformation study Bible I used as a gift. The silver gilding he added on the page edges has a stunning mirror finish resembling highly polished chrome. Jeffrey will customize your rebinding to your specifications and even emboss your logo into the leather, making whatever he rebinds a one-of-a-kind work of art. For more details on Post Tenebris Lux Bible Rebinding, go to ptlbiblerebinding.com. That's ptlbiblerebinding.com.
Did you know that all believers are priests? In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, the Apostle Peter describes Christ's church as comprising a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So if you're a Christian, you're also a priest. Now you can find the newest styles in Reformed and Protestant apparel at citizenpriest.com. Citizenpriest.com specializes in Christian-themed t-shirts and clothing especially for Reformed Christians. Citizenpriest.com's merchandise is purposefully scripture-based and meant for the edification of the saints and the furtherance of the gospel. Let everyone know that you stand firm on the doctrines of the Reformed faith by wearing apparel from citizenpriest.com. Visit citizenpriest.com today.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and if you just tuned us in, our guest today for the full 2 hours is Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries, and we are addressing today something that created waves all over the world with religiously minded people, and that is the Pope, the Grand Imam, and the Joint Declaration on Human Fraternity. Our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us, as always, your first name, at least your city and state, and your country of residence. If you live outside the USA, please only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. And Dr. White, we have a first-time questioner today. And it just so happens that it is somebody that I mentioned in the beginning of the program who loves the new intro of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, created by Jason Martin and the rest of the musicians involved in that really phenomenal new intro that we have. I'm speaking of the former lead guitarist of Petra, Pete Orta, in Denison, Texas. And he has a two-part question for you. Is the Roman Catholic Church still against their members interpreting the Bible for themselves, meaning The priest is the only one allowed to interpret the Holy Scriptures. That's his the first part of his question.
Well, nothing has changed technically. The problem is that's obviously consistent with Roman Catholicism as we knew it 50 years ago. But when you start talking about Francis, that's the whole thing. He seems to be open to so many other types of expressions and perspectives and viewpoints that you don't hear him saying, well, you need the magisterium to tell you, you know, what to believe about X, Y, or Z. He just operates in such a different realm than apologetics must operate in. I mean, I've commented many times that liberals on any side don't produce apologists because they don't really believe anything. So why should they argue about it? It's sort of like, you know, when we had the debate with Barry Lynn, you know, there is a reason why he was frustrated by the end. He doesn't really believe anything. And
right.
That came out fairly clearly. And so when you have someone like Francis, it just does not seem to be the time of apologetics within the Roman Communion. And some people would argue it's not the time of apologetics within our entire society, because the idea of objective truth, a revelation from God that's binding upon everyone, all those things are very much out of step with a secularizing Western world. There's no two ways about that. So, you know, to answer that question, you'd have to go back to the Catechism, you'd have to go back to Vatican II and those documents. Those documents haven't been changed, but this does illustrate the problem. You can have documents that say X, Y, or Z. They then have to be interpreted by someone. And when this Pope is the one who is not so much interpreting, but himself assigning people to important positions that sort of determine that type of thing, determine who's going to be doing that interpreting, that's why between one pontificate and the next, you can have massive swings into exactly how these beliefs are applied and things like that. So I've not heard Francis addressing that issue directly, but the old perspective required the old views of Roman Catholicism, the types of views that we encountered when we did those debates back in the 90s and early 2000s, and it's tough for those guys to keep doing what they're doing when the Pope's sitting there going, well, who am I to know? Or, you know, a little boy comes up and my daddy was an atheist and he's died. Did he go to hell? And, well, no, because he had you all baptized. It's really hard to see how that fits with the historic position.
And, of course, his question specifically said, is the priest the only one allowed to interpret the Holy Scriptures? And you will have multitudes of Catholic apologists say, in response to anyone mentioning that their local parish priest is a nut who believes in all kinds of crazy
right.
liberal left-wing thing. Oh, what he says doesn't really mean anything. So,
right, yeah, no, and it, obviously the olden days was, you know, that that local priest was the voice of the church, but even at that point, they'll say, well, okay, but, you know, we're talking about the church in the sense of the entire magisterium, and you know, if they want to get real technical and specific, then they will certainly dismiss any particular priest and would say, well, there is a agreed-upon general teaching. But, again, today, within Roman Catholicism, there is such a massively wide perspective that is being expressed, even amongst those priests, that it's, like I said, it's a difficult time for those apologists.
Yes, and the problem that the Roman Catholic Church has when they accuse us of having a blueprint for anarchy in Sola Scriptura, they don't have an infallible interpreter for their alleged infallible interpreter.
Well, exactly. Yeah, no, it's... The blueprint for anarchy argument has never worked, but it has never worked less than it does now.
Right.
I'm sure it's not going to stop Patrick from repeating it, but he's got to see what the problems must be difficult each day.
Oh, that was Patrick that coined that? I thought it was a Scott Hahn for some reason.
I'm pretty sure it was Patrick Madrid. I mean, I first heard him using that in that debate in, what, 91 or something like that. I forget exactly what the year it was over in Los Angeles. And then in the book Against Sola Scriptura, that was the title of his chapter. So I've always associated that specific phraseology with Patrick Madrid, who has a regular radio program on EWTN, and that's sort of what he does these days.
And Pete Orta's follow-up question is, and if the church is still against this, meaning private interpretation or reading the Bible on your own and exegeting it and so on, how do the priests handle it? Are you excommunicated still in today's modern times? I think it takes an awful lot to get excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church.
There's about the only people who get excommunicated are either people who get caught in sex scandals or people who try to ordain somebody. I mean, when you look at what is believed by the majority of the professors at Boston College or Boston University, they're so far out of the mainstream, and technically there is a automatic excommunication that God does basically when you reject de fide dogma. So there's sort of a spiritual excommunication, then there's when the church gets around to catching up with what God has already done, and there are some Roman Catholics that would argue that there's a vast difference between those two, and that that explains why the church is so hesitant to do anything relevant today. But yeah, it's a mess. Every time people in Congress who are allegedly Roman Catholics pass laws or take positions that are 1,000% against that of the Roman Catholic Church on abortion and infanticide and everything else, I'm just sort of like, well, you know, when you guys get serious and actually take these folks out and do not allow them to partake at the Mass or whatever else it is you might want to do, then talk to me. But you're not doing that officially. It's not coming from up top. I did hear that there was a bishop that did take an action recently in regards to one ultra-leftist Democrat promoting infanticide or something like that, but that was just one individual. Yeah, excommunication doesn't happen very often anymore.
And you will typically see the most notorious of pro-abortionists and pro-same-sex marriage advocates on Ash Wednesday in the media with the cross of ash on their foreheads, and there's no public official denunciation of these people who are viewing the murder of children as a sacrament, practically.
Pretty much, yeah.
And let's see, Pete Orta says, and yes, Dr. James, I do know who you are, and we have a couple of things in common, reform theology and cycling. And he says, bonus question, what's the longest distance you have ever been on a bike? Me, 105 miles.
I am a knight of Sufferlandria, which means I, on a trainer indoors, a smart trainer, I did the knighthood for the Sufferlandria exercise videos, which took me 232 miles in one day. Outdoors, my longest ride is 202 miles. And regularly, I'm training right now. It's tough. I'm getting older. I've got my left hip's causing me problems right now. But I'm still training for the big rides up in Colorado that I do, including the triple bypass ride, which is 120 miles, 10,500 feet of climbing in one day at high altitudes in Colorado.
Appropriate name for that.
Yeah. Well, especially when you do the double triple bypass, which is, I haven't offered that for a few years now, but I've done it three times. You do that ride, you stay the night in Avon, Colorado, then you ride back the next day. So it's 240 miles, 21,000 feet. So that's pure insanity. I think it's even more insane to do my favorite ride, which I'm training for, which is the Mount Evans Hill Climb, because the finish line in that is at 14,130 feet above sea level. So there's half the oxygen at that altitude. Once you get up that high, even Jerry Matatic starts sounding sane. And
well, thank you, Pete Orta, and we look forward to your return to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio for another interview. You did a phenomenal job the last time you were on, the last two times, actually. We have another first-time questioner, Kevin from Philadelphia. Is there a Christian justification for us to join with members of different religions to assent to a declaration affirming against social dogmas such as abortion or same-sex marriage, or would they be compromises of our faith in the name of ecumenism?
Yeah, and I sort of figured we'd be there by now. We'll probably get into the next hour a little bit more, but that is really what some of the issues are, is looking at the actual language. The question is, how far can you go without compromise in saying, okay, we all live in the same world, and we are, especially in places like Israel, significantly packed together. We can't avoid each other. I was in Israel a few months ago, and I decided to run from our hotel where we were staying to the gates of the Garden of Gethsemane and back again. It was only 2.5K one direction, so a 5K run. What I didn't realize is I had to run down through a completely Arab neighborhood to get there. And so I just kept on running, figuring they had no idea who in the world I was, and as long as I didn't slow down, I was probably going to be okay. But the point was that everything is packed so tightly over there that you have to live life in a common fashion. And so the question becomes, how do you do that? Can we have conversation? Is there a place for recognizing that religious people as a whole find transgenderism and the profaning of marriage and these issues to be destructive of all human flourishing, and that as people of faith, you can stand up and say, no, God has created us in such a way that this is inappropriate. That's really what you're sort of looking at with this document, because if you look at it carefully, it says numerous true, proper things. It does identify numerous areas where Muslims and Christians as a whole would agree with one another that the direction in which society is going generally, even globally, not so much in Africa, but in many other, most of the Western countries, is destructive of human flourishing, destructive of human happiness, and destructive of society as a whole. But what's interesting is I did a search on it, and it never refers to Jesus as Lord. I don't believe it refers to Jesus at all. And so the question becomes, what does that foundation look like, and how does it differ fundamentally? Because the Muslim cannot view Jesus as Lord and cannot view the law of God as having been affirmed in his death, burial, and resurrection, and he's not coming again. And so we have these fundamental differences along those lines. So how do you handle that aspect of this without giving the impression that you can actually address what's going on in this world outside the lordship of Christ? That's really where the question comes up. And obviously I did not find the document's answers on that to be very helpful, and in fact, the paragraph that caught the attention very strongly of even Roman Catholics has the specific statement, this divine wisdom is the source from which the right to freedom of belief and the freedom to be different derives. I skipped a sentence. The pluralism and the diversity of religions, color, sex, race, and language are willed by God in his wisdom through which he created human beings. So it affirms the fact that human beings are created, but notice it says the pluralism and diversity of religions are willed by God in his wisdom. Now, both from a Christian perspective and a Muslim perspective, for different reasons, that's a highly problematic statement.
Even for somebody faithful to the Council of Trent.
most definitely, right. You look at something like that, and, okay, religions, that says color, sex, race, and language. Well, that's different. That's in the creative decree of God as to how human beings are to exist and how they express their existence. But this basically says that pluralism, plural religions, is willed by God in his wisdom. Now, we would say everything that takes place, the reformed person does so under the decree of God, but that takes us into the discussion of the secret will of God, his decree, and then his revealed will, which is found in his word. And in the one, obviously, it's his intention that there be distinctions so that those who are approved can be seen. But in the other, the idea of saying, well, yeah, God wants to do this. He wants to establish Islam over here for these folks, and he wants Christianity over here, and it's okay for the Buddhists over there. And obviously that leads to this whole pluralistic concept that I think there are lots of pluralists within Roman Catholicism today, don't get me wrong. But that's not the historical perspective that has marked Roman Catholicism.
Well, we have to go to our midway break right now. It's the longer than normal break because Grace Life Radio, 90.1 FM in Lake City, Florida, airs this program, and they need to localize Iron Trip and Zion Radio to the Lake City, Florida area with their own public service announcements and commercials. So while we are airing our commercials that are global and they are airing theirs, which are local, please use this time to not only write down information provided by our advertisers so that you can more frequently and successfully patronize them, because we depend on the advertising dollars of our sponsors in order to exist. So please try to patronize them as frequently and as heavily as you can. But also write down questions for Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. They can involve this joint declaration. They can involve Roman Catholicism. They can involve Islam. They can involve anything in regarding to Reformed theology. And I hope that you who are waiting already online to have your questions asked, I hope that you wait patiently, and we'll get to each and every one of you that time will allow. So don't go away, God willing. We're going to be right back after these messages with more of Dr. James R. White.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Chris Sorensen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio here. I want to tell you about a man I have personally known for many years. His name is Dan Buttafuoco. Dan is a personal injury and medical malpractice lawyer, but not the type that typically comes to mind. Dan cares about people and is a theologian himself. Recently, he wrote a book titled Consider the Evidence for the Bible. Ravi Zacharias wrote the foreword. Dan also has a master's degree in theology. Dan handles serious injury and medical malpractice cases in all 50 states. He represents many Christians in serious injury matters all over the country. Dan is an exceptional trial lawyer. He wrote the test for the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And currently, his firm has over 100 cases that have settled for $1 million or more, and in approximately 10 different states. In Illinois, his lawyers had the fourth largest settlement in the state's history.
In New York, his case involving a paralyzed police officer made the front page of the Law Journal. If you have a serious personal injury or medical malpractice claim in any state, I recommend that you call Dan. Consultations are free. There is no fee unless you win. Dan Buttafuoco's number is 1-800-669-4878. 1-800-669-4878. Or email me for Dan's contact information at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Whichever edition you choose, trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
One sure way all Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners can help keep my show on the air is to support my advertisers. I know you all use batteries every day, so I'm urging you all from now on to exclusively use BatteryDepot.com for all your battery needs. At BatteryDepot.com, they're changing the status quo. They're flipping the script. They're sticking it to the man. In other words, they'd like to change the battery industry for good by providing an extensive inventory of top-of-the-line batteries that are uniformly new, dependable, and affordable. Ordering from BatteryDepot.com ensures you'll always get fresh out-of-the-box batteries you can count on to work properly at competitive prices. Whether you need batteries for cordless phones, cell phones, radios, PCs, laptops, tablets, baby monitors, hearing aids, smoke detectors, credit card readers, digital cameras, electronic cigarettes, GPSs, MP3 players, watches, or nearly anything else you own that needs batteries, go to BatteryDepot.com. Next day shipping available. All products protected by 30-day guarantees and 6-month warranties. Call 866-403-3768. That's 866-403-3768. Or go to BatteryDepot.com. That's BatteryDepot.com.
I'm Dr. Gary Kimbrell, pastor of Bethlehem Baptist Church in Laurel, Mississippi. God tells us in James 1:27 that pure and undefiled religion is to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. In the providence of God, 3 years ago, I discovered a poor small church outside Lusaka, Zambia, in a township called Kabanana, who are taking care of 24 orphans. I found them just at the time when they had lost all their funding. What was I to do? Could I just say, God bless you, and walk away? The situation of the children sat heavily upon me. As I was praying concerning this need, it came to me, I trust from the Lord, to tell the orphans' plight to a broader audience. The entire need for their clothing, food, education, and some medical services is $73 per month per child. If just 50 of us would give $35 a month, we could meet the need. Bethlehem Baptist Church will pay the fee to get the funds there, so if you give a dollar will get to the orphans. In this season of hope and giving, will you consider giving hope to 24 orphans? Please send your gift of any amount to Bethlehem Baptist Church, 838 Reed Road, Laurel, Mississippi, 39443, or donate through our website, bbclaurel.com. Again, the address is Bethlehem Baptist Church, 838 Reed Road, Laurel, Mississippi, 39443, or bbclaurel.com. Thank you.
Iron Sharpens Iron welcomes Solid Rock Remodeling to our family of sponsors. Serving South Central Pennsylvania, Solid Rock Remodeling is focused on discovering, understanding, and exceeding your expectations. They deliver personalized project solutions with exceptional results. Solid Rock Remodeling offers a full range of home renovations, including kitchen and bath remodeling, decks, porches, windows and doors, roof and siding, and more. For a clear, detailed professional estimate,
Call this trustworthy team of problem solvers who provide superior results that stand the test of time. Call Solid Rock Remodeling at 717-697-1981. 717-697-1981. Or visit SolidRockRemodeling.com. That's SolidRockRemodeling.com. Solid Rock Remodeling, bringing new life to your home.
Hi, I'm Buzz Taylor, frequent co-host with Chris Arnson on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I would like to introduce you to my good friends Todd and Patty Jennings at CVBBS, which stands for Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. Todd and Patty specialize in supplying Reformed and Puritan books and Bibles at discount prices that make them affordable to everyone. Since 1987, the family-owned and operated book service has sought to bring you the best available Christian books and Bibles at the best possible prices. Unlike other book sites, they make no effort to provide every book that is available because, frankly, much of what is being printed is not worth your time. That means you can get to the good stuff faster. It also means that you don't have to worry about being assaulted by the pornographic, heretical, and otherwise faith-insulting material promoted by the secular book vendors. Their website is cvbbs.com. Browse the pages at ease, shop at your leisure, and purchase with confidence as Todd and Patty work in service to you, the church, and to Christ. That's Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service at cvbbs.com. That's cvbbs.com. Let Todd and Patty know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And cvbbs.com is now under new ownership, and they are continuing in their sponsorship of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. We'll give you more details on that in the days to come. But if you want to call cvbbs.com to place your order instead of doing it online, their toll-free number is 800-656-0231, 800-656-0231. They man that line Monday through Friday, typically from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And they are offering a 40% discount on two books by Dr. James R. White today. If you purchase The Roman Catholic Controversy, or if you purchase What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran, you will get 40% off the retail price by mentioning Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, ordering by phone or by ordering at cvbbs.com, and put in the instructions after you place the order. This is the only way that you can tell them that you heard about this show on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. If you are ordering by the website, you have to click on instructions and put in there, I heard about your book ministry through Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, and I want 40% off The Roman Catholic Controversy and or What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran. By the way, I forgot to mention to two of our listeners who sent in questions before the break, Pete Orta and Kevin from Philadelphia. You have both won both of those books. You have each won The Roman Catholic Controversy and What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran, thanks to our friends at Bethany House Publishing and Baker Books. Thank you for providing these books for us, and cvbbs.com will ship them out to you at no charge to either you or to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. We need your full mailing addresses, so if you could, Pete Orta and also Kevin from Philadelphia, please give me your full mailing addresses so I can give them to cvbbs.com. And before we return to our discussion with Dr. James R. White on the Pope, the Grand Imam, and the Joint Declaration on Human Fraternity, we just have some special announcements in regard to events coming up that we want you to attend. The Sanctification Through Suffering Conference is being held March 15th through the 16th in Freehold, New Jersey, featuring Justin Peters, Frank Mullis, Joe Suozzo, and Colleen Sharp. If you would like more details on registering for this conference, March 15th through the 16th in Freehold, New Jersey, go to strivingforeternity.org. strivingforeternity.org. And then the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville, Long Island, New York, is going to be hosting a debate on Saturday, March 30th. This debate is between the pastor of Word of Truth Church, Bruce Bennett, and a Roman Catholic apologist, Matthew Luke Broderick. The theme is Purgatory, Is It Biblical? That was the theme of probably one of the most memorable Catholic debates on Long Island with Dr. James R. White that nearly led to a lawsuit.
Well, having you moderate anything almost always leads to a lawsuit.
Yeah, for some reason, you never want me to MC anything that involves Muslims or homosexuals. I don't know why.
Oh, that's exactly right. Exactly right.
I don't know, but I did do that anyway, and I think I did a very responsible.
That's because we drugged you before.
But anyway, if you want to attend this debate on Saturday, March 30th, in Farmingville, Long Island, New York, at the Word of Truth Church, go to WOTChurch.com for all the details. WOTChurch.com. That's the debate on Purgatory, Is It Biblical? Between Pastor Bruce Bennett and Catholic apologist Matthew Luke Broderick on Purgatory, Is It Biblical? And then coming up after that, I'm having a debate on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio between Gary DeMar and a Reformed Baptist pastor and author, Doug Van Dorn. The debate is on the theme, let's see here, it is on, were the sons of God in Genesis 6 of natural or supernatural origin? Gary DeMar, most of you probably are familiar with him, the former president of American Vision, co-founder of, or actually he wasn't the co-founder, it existed before he joined the staff there, but he has been well-known, affiliated with American Vision for many years until his recent retirement officially from that ministry. But Gary DeMar is also an author, a guest on this show a number of times. Doug Van Dorn has also been on this show, and not only is he a pastor, but he wrote the book Giants, Sons of the Gods. He is taking the position that the sons of God in Genesis 6 were of supernatural origin, whereas Gary DeMar is taking the position that they are of natural origin. That's on this show, Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Wednesday, April 10th, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So mark that on your calendar so you could listen in, and we hope that you enjoy and are blessed by that. And then coming up is a conference that I love to attend every year here in Pennsylvania at the Elizabethtown College. That is the East Coast Ministers Conference of Banner of Truth, and that is May 28th through the 30th. And the theme is, I Believe in the Holy Spirit. The speakers are Jeff Kingswood, Terry Johnson, David Vaughan, who's a Reformed Baptist missionary in France, Stephen J. Nichols, the president of the Reformation Bible College, which was founded by the late R.C. Sproul and Ligonier Ministries, Michael Morales, and Chad Vegas. That's May 28th through the 30th in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, the East Coast Ministers Conference of the Banner of Truth. If you would like to register for this conference, go to banneroftruth.org. banneroftruth.org, click on events, and then scroll down to East Coast Ministers Conference. They have other conferences that might be closer to you on the West Coast and in the United Kingdom, and I know that we have listeners in places all over the globe, so if you see a conference nearer to you that you'd rather attend, you could click on that as well. I hope as many of you as possible, though, come to the conference where I will be, God willing, East Coast Ministers Conference, May 28th through the 30th in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, on I Believe in the Holy Spirit. Last but not least, the Foundations Conference is being held once again in Manhattan. I love this conference as well. And if you would like to attend this conference, I would strongly urge you to register as quickly as possible because the venue only seats about 200 people. The speakers include Dr. Stephen J. Lawson, who you just heard moments ago voicing the advertisement for New Covenant Church NYC, one of our sponsors. Dr. Stephen J. Lawson is truly a profound preacher and teacher. One of my favorite preachers as well, Reverend Jeff Thomas, a retired pastor in Wales and author. And if you've never heard him, you've got to take a train, plane, or automobile to wherever he is preaching because he is absolutely phenomenal. Richard Caldwell Jr., Reverend Armin Tomasian, who I am strongly confident will be a household name, especially amongst Reformed Christians within the next decade. He is a extraordinary young man who I met at the Foundations Conference about 2 years ago. I just love his preaching and teaching, and he's also extremely humble. What a precious brother in Christ and humble servant of Christ, Reverend Armin Tomasian. Andrew Quigley and Paul Washer has just been added to the roster. So if you'd like to attend the Foundations Conference in Manhattan on December 19th and 20th, Go to thefoundationsconference.com, thefoundationsconference.com. And please tell all of these folks running these conferences that you heard about them from Chris Arnz and an Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. And now, last but not least, if you love this show, you don't want it to disappear from the airwaves, please go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now, and donate as frequently as you can and as heavily as you can, because we really do urgently need your advertising, I mean your donations. And, of course, you could advertise as well by sending me an email to chrisarnzen@gmail.com and put advertising in the subject line, and we will help you launch an ad campaign as long as it, whatever it is you're promoting is compatible with what we believe here on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. But as far as donations are concerned, go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. You can donate instantly with a debit or credit card. If you prefer snail mail, an address will appear on the screen where you can mail a check made payable to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio when you click ironsharpensironradio.com and then click support. Please never siphon money away from your regular giving to your local church where you are a member in order to give to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Never do that. Never put your family in financial jeopardy by giving to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Those are two commands of God. And providing for my show, obviously, is not a command of God. But if you are financially blessed above and beyond your ability to obey those two commands, please donate as frequently as you can and as heavily as you can to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. If you do not have a local church where you are a member and you're not prayerfully seeking for one, you are living in disobedience to God. And if you need help, I can help you find a church. I've already helped people all over the world find churches near them. I have lists of biblically faithful churches everywhere. So please send me an email to chrisarnzen@gmail.com and put "I need a church home" in the subject line. And now we are back with our conversation with Dr. James R. White on the Pope, the Grand Imam, and the Joint Declaration on Human Fraternity.
And unfortunately, we're out of time.
Well, as they say, you got to do what you got to do, you know. But if you'd like to send an email, do it quickly, because we don't want to run out of time before your question is asked. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. We have Pastor George Jensen from the First Enola Church of God in Enola, Pennsylvania. What a blessing to my life this brother has been to me, even though he is not a Calvinist. He calls himself a plain tea Arminian, and he calls me a black coffee Calvinist. And he is just a dear brother. But he says, can you ask Dr. White, do this corrupt document? I don't understand that. That's a grammatical error here. Maybe due to this corrupt document, the clergy sex abuse scandal and other corruptions we see in the Roman Catholic religion, do you think Catholicism will maintain its adherence, gain adherence, or head towards extinction? Extinction. That would be some colossal event if the Roman Catholic Church ceased to exist, but if you could.
Well, it would be, but I mean, it's been a long time since I've been in Italy. I would like to get a chance to go back, but even when I was there last, which was well over 10 years ago, there were shuttered churches everywhere, and my understanding is there's more and more. So I think Rome is in a crisis. So much of its membership is purely cultural now, and I think the number of people who are truly committed to its dogmatic teachings are, and this is true in Western societies in regards to most state churches as well. The state churches in Europe and things like that are deader than a doornail, and most of Roman Catholicism is too. So the question is, once these societies become thoroughly secular and begin to punish any type of religious sentiment and things like that, what are those who have this very loose association and connection going to do? And that's a question everybody has to answer for themselves. But the Lollards in the late 1300s, early 1400s, were raising the issue of sexual abuse by Roman Catholic priests and homosexuality. And so that's nothing new. I mean, that has been a century by century by century reality that I think goes directly to the nature of the unbiblical priesthood. Quote-unquote government, churches, sacralism, things related to that. This document, most people have forgotten about it, to be honest with you, sadly. I mean, we just have such a short attention span. I didn't see a lot of in-depth discussion of it. That doesn't surprise me. But one of the things that struck me about this document that we should get to before we run out of time, I've only read a little small amount of it, is the fact, other than the fact that there is no, and maybe could not be any because of the nature of it, reference to the Lordship of Christ over history or anything like that, which isn't a big emphasis in Roman Catholicism anyway. That's more of an Orthodox, as in Orthodox biblical understanding, not Eastern Orthodox. What's fascinating is it refers to us as brothers and sisters. And you might say, well, yeah, 841, Catholic Catechism, so on and so forth. But here's where the disconnection sort of takes place. In the Quran itself, Surah 98, Ayat 6, indeed, they who disbelieved among the people of the Scripture and the polytheists will be in the fire of hell, abiding eternally therein. Those are the worst of creatures. And so you have a specific statement here. And again, we don't know, one of the things about the Quran is no one knows the exact order in which the various chapters were written. The order that they are in is based on size, not upon chronology. And so that's one of the problems of trying to read the Quran, is it just jumps all over the place, next to impossible to establish a context. But whatever the background is here, you have what are called the kafirs. To disbelieve is to engage in covering over truth. And so they who disbelieved among the people of the book, it's literally the al-kitab, the people of the book. That can be Jews or Christians, depending on the context. Sometimes context doesn't tell, but generally in this context, a kafir is a person who has rejected the message of Muhammad and of the Quran amongst Jews and Christians. And the mushrikun. And the mushrikun are those who commit shirk. Shirk is the unforgivable sin. It is the association of anyone or anything with Allah. And so the vast majority, not all, but the vast majority of the world's Muslims believe that we as Christians are mushrikun, that we commit shirk by the association of Jesus with the worship of God. And, of course, they believe Jesus is just a prophet, a mighty prophet of God, but he's just a prophet. He was created. He is not eternal. He did not die on the cross. He did not rise from the dead. He's a prophet, but he's not all the things that we believe that him to be. And so the vast majority of Muslims believe that we are mushrikun. And so we're guilty of shirk, and we're mushriks, mushrikun plural. And so it says their abode, abiding eternally therein, fire of hell. And those are the worst of creatures. And unfortunately, I can point you to lots of sermons from imams in around the world where there are tensions between a Muslim majority and a Christian minority. And they will point to this ayah in Surah 98 that, you know, indicates this. That indicates that we are the worst of all creatures if we maintain our belief. The idea is, well, not necessarily. If you haven't heard the truth of Islam, then, you know, maybe you wouldn't be in a bad situation. But once you have, which, of course, if you live in a majority Muslim country, that sort of assumes that you do know what Islam teaches, then not only are you going to abide for all of eternity in hell, but you're the worst of creation. You're the worst of creatures. And you combine that with the fascinating discussion in Surah 3, which I do go over a little bit more in my book and discuss this. But I don't know if you remember, Chris, a document that came out, what was it? Might be even 10 years ago now, that was called A Common Word. and some liberals from Yale and places like that were involved in putting this all together. Well, that's a phrase that comes from Surah 3. And it was when some Christians from Najran came and basically debated with Muhammad. And this is reflected in the text of the Quran. And beginning of verse 61, verse 59, truly the likeness of Jesus in the sight of God is that of Adam. He created him from dust and said to him, be, and he was. The truth is from thy Lord, so do not be among the doubters, and to whomsoever disputes with thee over it. After the knowledge has come unto you, say, come, let us call upon our sons and your sons, our women and your women, ourselves and yourselves, then let us pray earnestly so as to place the curse of God upon those who lie. This is indeed the true account. There is no God but God, and truly God is the mighty, the wise. It's about as close as you can get to the Shahada, the Islamic confession there in verse 62. And if they turn away, then God knows well the workers of corruption. Say, O people, the book, come to a word common between us and you. That's where they took this from for some reason. It's a curse, but that's where they took it from. That we shall worship none but God, shall not associate aught with him, that's will not commit shirk, and shall not take one another as lords apart from God. As they turn away, say, bear witness that we are submitters, and of course submitters, submission is Islam, a Muslim. And so you take what the Quran actually says in the context in which it says it, in the language in which it's written, and it makes very, very strong condemnatory statements about anyone who would maintain knowledgeably their profession of faith that Jesus Christ is truly God in the flesh and so on and so forth. And for me, the issue there is, did the author of the Quran even know what we believe? That's why right now we're setting up a debate at the East London Mosque for early May in London, England, where I'll be debating that topic again. Which I've debated. In fact, that was the topic of my debate with Bassam Zawadi a number of years ago. I and someone else are going to be debating that issue again, because that's really the issue between Christians and Jews. That does not get discussed, and I'm a little bit concerned in the document that the document might be basically saying we shouldn't discuss those things, because when it talks about the necessity of us having conversation with one another and things like that. It also warns, it says that dialogue among believers means coming together in the vast space of spiritual, human, and shared social values, and from here, transmitting the highest moral virtues that religions aim for. It also means avoiding unproductive discussions. I wonder what that means. I mean, yeah, there are unproductive discussions. There are discussions based upon ignorance. The document does say that we should learn from one another, understand each other, represent one another accurately. That's obviously extremely important. But I wonder what these unproductive discussions are, and the question would be, does this document open up any opportunity, even from the Roman Catholic side, to have meaningful debate on these things? Those are some of the real issues that I had to think of, because I am an individual who has done both dialogue and debate, and yet in all of those situations, you cannot avoid, if you understand Islam and if you represent it accurately, you cannot avoid the fact that Islam comes after Christianity historically and therefore interacts with us. We are addressed in their holy book, and what is said does not accurately represent what we believe. So we have to deal with that. That's what else are we supposed to be talking about? I mean, we can, I guess, talk about transgenderism or infanticide and things like that, but if we're actually going to talk with one another about what makes us what we are, that's where we have to be focused upon. We have to disagree on those things, and we have to have the freedom to be able to say, you're wrong about this, and here's why, and then hear why the other side doesn't believe they're wrong, and press harder. And that's certainly what we've been involved with now for quite some time.
Thank you, Pastor George Jensen. Please give me your full mailing address in Enola, Pennsylvania, so that CVBBS.com can ship you out a free copy of both the Roman Catholic controversy, and what every Christian needs to know about the Quran, both by our guest, Dr. James R. White. And we want to thank again Bethany House Publishers and Baker Books for their generosity in providing us with these books to those who are writing in questions today. We're going to our last break right now. It's going to be a lot briefer or a lot more brief than the last break. So if you want to send in a question, do it now or forever hold your peace because we're rapidly running out of time. Don't go away. We'll be right back, God willing, after these messages from our sponsors.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Hi, I'm Stefan Lindblad, Assistant Professor of Systematic Theology at IRBS Theological Seminary in Mansfield, Texas. I accepted this call to teach at the seminary because I'm firmly convinced that the people of God in the churches of our Lord Jesus Christ need to be firmly grounded in the truth of Holy Scripture. I'm excited to be teaching such subjects as the nature of theology and the doctrine of Scripture, and even the doctrine of the person and work of Jesus Christ. Our churches and our people need to be well grounded in these truths. Indeed, future ministers of the gospel need to understand these truths in order to proclaim them to all of God's people. If you want to learn more about our program, visit us online at irbsseminary.org.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Every day at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ, staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York, by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe by God's grace that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at ProvidenceBaptistChurchMA.org, that's ProvidenceBaptistChurchMA.org, or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Listening to Christian radio can be a big gamble spiritually. Even many of the major Christian networks that include excellent, biblically faithful teachers on their lineup sadly often also include the worst of doctrinally dangerous heretics. If you are a lover of the doctrines of sovereign grace, you need not fear listening 24 hours a day to firstloveradio.org. They feature Christ-centered programming from Reformed pastors and teachers you can rely upon for theological soundness and biblical faithfulness, such as Dr. W. R. Downing, Dr. Peter Masters, Pastor Joe Jackowitz, Pastor Robert Gifford, Al Martin, Edward Delcor, and more. FirstLoveRadio.org also live streams my Iron Sharpens Iron radio program daily. Please stick around on FirstLoveRadio.org after Iron Sharpens Iron radio is over to continue being blessed by the unwavering proclamation of the gospel of sovereign grace. Spread the word about FirstLoveRadio.org. Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and this is the last segment of our interview today with Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. And if you want to send in a question, do so now immediately at chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. We have Gordy from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, who says, "Greetings, Dr. White, from a member of the church where you were baptized, Bible Baptist Church of Sharmanstown, Pennsylvania. Referring more specifically to the United Nations Universal Declaration on Human Rights from 1948, Pope Francis recently said, sound law is the essential instrument for achieving social justice and nurturing fraternal bonds between peoples. This new declaration reads like a repackaged version with a contemporary spin. Rome has never been guilty of a strong commitment to biblical truth, but rather to tradition. This would explain their failure to understand and acknowledge that the gospel will divide peoples, even families, not bring about solidarity. What are your thoughts?"
Well, did it? The quotation was given. Was it sound law that was what will bring about? I couldn't understand what you said there. It was sort of distorted.
Let me see if I could find that question, because I deleted it as soon as I finished reading it.
Well, don't worry about that.
Okay.
The problem with Francis and the problem with basically everyone who was steeped in liberation theology, especially in its South American form, and that's what he's all about. They are very deeply politically oriented, very much toward a socialist communist perspective, and so they're that's what's driving everybody crazy. Is instead of someone like Ratzinger knew what it meant to be living in a day like today, and so he could play the political game too, but he based most of what he was saying in church tradition and documents. And because, I mean, most people do know this, but he had been the head of the Congregation for the Faith, which is the modern equivalent, modern continuation, literally, of the Inquisition. And so, I mean, he was called the German Shepherd. He was the doctrinal watchdog for Roman Catholicism. And so at least you had a pretty decent idea of where he was coming from, what he was saying. Francis just drives everybody nuts. Roman Catholic and other, because you don't know. You can't tell. He does the political thing, which allows for multiple interpretations, multiple ways of taking his words. And, you know, John Paul did some of that too, but not for the same reasons. And so, yeah, it's frustrating. So, you know, that sounds like what you'd expect out of Rome. Rome's going to say what Rome wants to say, and Rome doesn't have a commitment to the foundational biblical truths that we hold dear. But the way they say it allows for the conservative Roman Catholics to at least pretend like they do. And that's what sort of, I sort of feel, well, I was going to say a part of me feels sorry for it. Not really, but I do think about what it must be like to be some of these men that I've debated, some of whom I've debated many times. They've got to know in their heart and soul that this Pope does not believe the things that only a few years ago they were saying were absolutely divine truths, and yet they still remain committed to the system. There's just got to be some dark nights of the soul where they're sitting there thinking, you know, what do I do? It'd be wonderful if they take the right direction and get out of that mess.
By the way, would you be willing if I could find a...
No. That was the safest answer I could ever give. If Chris Arnson starts going, would you be willing? Nope. Not in this life.
Unfortunately, that's the way most of my job interviews ended. But... if I found a worthy Catholic apologist, not somebody who just wants to launch a career, who's just graduated from high school, but I mean a really worthy...
Yeah, there are a few of them out there, believe me.
Right, I know. But if I found one who is willing to debate the theme, is Pope Francis a faithful and safe shepherd, would you participate in that?
Well, either me or somebody who's better prepared, You're probably aware of the fact that I'm working on a PhD in a completely separate area, and so it would be, given that I just mentioned I'm going to be going over to the UK in May and debating on Islam there. I'm actually going over the week before that to the Netherlands. You know that they've gotten some guys over there have gotten in trouble for translating the Nashville Statement and making it available there. I'm going to be speaking with them. For them in a conference, and then I've still got missions work in Kauai, another trip back to the UK, Sydney, Brisbane, and that's just this year. And I'm supposed to be full time working on this other thing. So it's more of an issue of time. I mean, that obviously would be a great topic. I just would be concerned about having the time to. Dig through everything that, I mean, there's plenty of resources, so maybe if I could get somebody to assist me in the collection of materials, I think that would be a very useful topic. There's no two ways about it.
And speaking of the Netherlands, remember when 30 Muslims from the Netherlands flew out to New York City to hear you debate one of the imams in Manhattan or in Queens at that Presbyterian church in Queens?
I do not remember that.
Oh, sure. I thought I did tell you, obviously. That was pretty monumental. But
from the Netherlands.
Yes, and you, in fact, I'm not sure that this person was among them, but you, the only person that seemed to react negatively to the debate after it was over was a very Caucasian-looking Muslim who you were having a little bit of an argument with after the event was over. But he looked like he was from the Netherlands, but I don't know if that was one of the guys.
No, I didn't remember that, but I've never been to the Netherlands, and the fact that the government has indicated that it's considering criminalizing promoting something like the Nashville Statement tells you that you may have, I want to go visit the Ten Boom House before they don't allow me into the Netherlands.
Right.
Basically, is one of the things I'd like to do, but that tells you a lot about, you know. You had godly, tremendously God. I mean, it was what 110 years ago. They wasn't it Kuiper? that was the basically in charge. I mean, he was the head of the government. And in 100 years, you've gone to where you would criminalize believing what Christians have always believed about the nature of marriage. I mean, it can happen fast.
Yep. By the way, I don't know if this affects the way you answered Gordy from Bible Baptist Church in Sharmanstown, Pennsylvania, but I did look up his question, and he does say, Francis recently said, sound law is the essential instrument for achieving social justice and nurturing fraternal bonds between peoples.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, we could make that statement and then would define sound law as being reflective of God's law. I don't think that that's what Francis has in mind. I think Francis has a very liberal understanding of what that law would look like.
Well, Gordy, give us your full mailing address in Mechanicsburg and CVBBS.com. We'll ship you out a free copy of both The Roman Catholic Controversy and What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran. Compliments of Bethany House Publishing and Baker Books, and also compliments of CVBBS.com, who will be shipping that out to you at no charge to you or to us. We have Tyler in Mastic Beach, Long Island, New York. And Tyler says, thank you for your work in ministry, Dr. White. Do you think that those who criticize evangelistic outreach to Muslims are guilty of showing partiality as condemned in the book of James?
Well, it'll depend on why they condemn it. I have my talk at G3 was pretty much aimed at those who, out of fear or bigotry or bias, would refuse to reach out in love to the Muslim people. And I do know people who have that kind of a motivation, and most definitely they would be guilty of partiality and privileging certain groups over other groups in regards to the proclamation of the gospel. That's not the same thing as those people who, out of ignorance or fear, do not reach out as they should. That's not good, but it's not quite the same thing as the number of people that I have encountered who just quite simply have a very clear and very obvious bias and bigotry toward the Muslim people. And for whatever reason, as a Christian, that's just simply not something that is possible for us to defend or to act in light of. And so the answer is it could be, depending on why they are opposed to that kind of outreach. Or are they simply saying we should just send missionaries, it shouldn't be us, we shouldn't be the ones doing this, we should leave these people alone? Or is it just simply these people have been given over, these people are enemies, and then they start bringing up political issues or that type of thing, rather than having a truly biblical understanding of the need to communicate the gospel to every person, and that the Muslims need to hear the gospel because they have not heard the gospel. Obviously, there are some who have. I take that back. But the vast majority of Muslims, especially who live in Muslim-majority countries, have never heard the gospel. And if you have the idea you should only proclaim the gospel to somebody once, then I suppose you could use that as an excuse to not talk to all sorts of people. But sometimes it takes multiple people and multiple times that message to get through.
Yeah, it's a good thing that throughout history, Christian missionaries didn't have that mindset.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's see here. We have John in Bangor, Maine, who says, I have tuned in late, so I'm sorry if I am repeating something that somebody else asked, but when it comes to these kinds of documents, since the only thing that is binding upon the faithful Roman Catholic are those things that are dogma and declared ex cathedra by a pope, aren't these documents, by and large, really useless because they really don't enforce or bind the consciences of even Catholics to respond according to what these documents say? I am very much reminded of the joint declaration on justification between Catholics and Lutherans that came out not long ago, where neither the historic biblically orthodox Lutherans nor those Catholics that were historically accurate agreed with what was written in this document anyway.
Yeah, well, the problem with that is that you don't have anything anymore that is being released that is actually dogmatically binding. You haven't had the Pope speak ex cathedra in any meaningful fashion since the definition of the bodily assumption, 66 years ago? 69 years ago.
Bodily assumption of Mary, just so our listeners understand.
Right, yeah. And so if that were the case, then Rome really hasn't been saying anything at all. It's true, what was said about the statement on justification was only relevant to certain groups and very narrow groups, but look at how it was used by other people to promote their perspectives. The problem is Roman Catholicism is a very, very broad spectrum movement, and so these types of documents are important in the sense that the current pope would utilize what is in these documents as the basis of who he assigns to various positions. I mean, this pope has created a number of cardinals. Their agreement or disagreement with the positions he defines therein is going to be very important as to who gets to be a cardinal, and that means who gets to vote for the next pope. And, yeah, you know, it's going to have that long-term impact upon the direction of the church. Certainly, individual Roman Catholics, and especially Roman Catholic apologists, can make the argument, well, you know, this is not a dogmatically binding thing, and sort of go from there. That also gives the lie when they're saying, well, we can always turn to the Pope to give us directions as to what we're supposed to believe. Well, doesn't this give you direction as to what you're supposed to believe as well? All it demonstrates is that when I put that book bag up on the table in 1999, I think, in the debate in San Diego with Mitch Pacwa on Sola Scriptura, I started dragging all these books out and piled them up and said, Does this actually clarify the gospel, or has it muddied the gospel? That was a good illustration of why Sola Scriptura is important, and why the denial of Sola Scriptura has led to what you see within Roman Catholicism today, which if you want the true blueprint for anarchy, there it is. And that's what we're seeing in Roman Catholic schools and practice all around the world.
If you could, in 2 minutes now, just summarize what you most want etched in the hearts and minds of our listeners today in regard to this subject.
We're coming to the end, and we didn't do a lot of reading of the document. There wasn't really any reason to do that. I think that the real issue is that the document does not lay out for us the key issues of disagreement between Islam and Christianity and encourage meaningful and continued dialogue thereon. And anything that doesn't focus us upon that is going to be focusing us upon things that may be important. Like I said, there are many things the document says about respectful disagreements and the need to understand the other side that I fully agree with. I think that you know, down through the years, I've tried to demonstrate very clearly that you need to accurately represent the other side. You do not show respect for others. You don't show respect not only for their belief, but your own belief if you do not engage in meaningful study and accurate representation. But the fact that the statement really does not meaningfully present the centrality of the gospel, the centrality of the Lordship of Jesus Christ, even raise those issues in regards to what Islam says about those things and the denigration of Christ within the Quran or anything like that, and had that cryptic statement about unproductive discussions, makes me really wonder what those unproductive discussions might be, and if they might not be the very discussions that address these very things. That really is why Francis continues to give everybody on both sides of the Tiber River hives, and will continue to do so until his pontificate ends. And it does make you wonder how his pontificate is going to end. Is he going to follow Ratzinger? Would do something historic like that? And what's that going to lead to in the next generation? And there's one thing that is not boring these days is keeping an eye on what in the world's happening in the Vatican. It is fascinating. It's historic, but it's very unlike anything that's happened in the past. So We'll keep our eyes on it. We'll see what happens.
Well, I want you to stick around on the phone for just a couple of minutes so I could give you a proper goodbye off the air, but I want to thank you for being our guest in the midst of your very hectic schedule. I want to thank everybody who listened, especially those who took the time to write in questions, and I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner. We look forward to hearing from you and your questions next week for our guests on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.